This is the World Radio Network, now a special programme celebrating the 80th anniversary of Wooferton, the UK's last shortwave radio transmitting station.
This is Wooferton at 80, a special transmission by Encompass Digital Media, celebrating the 80th anniversary of Wooferton Transmitting Station. Hello, and wherever you're listening in the world, welcome to this very special programme marking the 80th anniversary of the first shortwave transmission from Wooferton. We're broadcasting on 17785 kHz to Europe, North Africa and the Middle East, on 15245 kHz to North America, and in DRM digital radio to Europe and beyond on 11725 kHz. And keep listening, because a little later I'll be telling you how you can send us your reception reports, as one lucky listener will be winning a very special piece of Wooferton memorabilia. It was 80 years ago today, on October the 17th, 1943, that Wooferton transmitted its first BBC programme. It is now the last remaining shortwave broadcasting station in the United Kingdom, located a few miles south of Ludlow, in the English county of Shropshire. In this special programme, we'll be hearing from some of the station's staff, both present and past, and finding out more about the station's long history, the technology and engineering that makes it all work, and what the future holds too. But first, here's Dave Porter, a former senior engineer at Wooferton, to tell us more about the glorious history of Wooferton Transmitting Station.
This is a station formerly known as Aussie 10. Aussie? Overseas Station Extension Number 10, and it was built in 1943 and was the last one of the Aussie stations to be built. You may well be wondering where the rest of them were. Well, Aussie 1 and 2 was an extension at Daventry in 1938, the east end and the west end of the main building. They got a small station there from 1933, but they extended it then at the beginning of the war, just before the war. Aussie 3 was very much in the wartime. It was planned pre-war, and that was at Rampersham in Dorset, and had six Marconi transmitters in there. Correction, four Marconi 100 kilowatt transmitters in there. Aussie 4, I can't remember where that one was, but it was probably medium wave. Aussie 5 was an extremely large station built at Otteringham near Hull. Had four 200 kilowatt medium wave or long wave transmitters. They were wave changeable. And the idea was to run three of them at 200 kilowatts each on long wave and one on medium wave at about 100 kilowatts. That was Aussie 5, and that was for broadcasting straight to the Third Reich across the sea as a ground wave facility. Aussie 6 was the extension at Droitwich, built early war 1941, and had two 200 kilowatt medium wave transmitters, and that was the first time following the prototype tests at Start Point where two transmitters had been put together, and also at horizontal polarisation on medium wave. So that was Aussie 6. Aussie 7 was probably Lisnagarvey, which had shortwave attached, and then came Aussie 8 and 9. That was Skelton in Cumberland with six Marconi 100 kilowatt shortwave transmitters in Aussie 8, and Aussie 9 had six ST&C transmitters. Unusual design in that they could run both, you could run the transmitters such that they both got two outputs, so you got 12 possible frequencies running out of there. The only proviso was if you were running on dual channel, as it was called, you had to have the same modulation on each of the channels at the same time. So there's a common modulator and two RF sections. About 100 kilowatts from that one. So that was Aussie 9. Aussie 10, this one was the last one. Very much the runt of the litter, really. It was a lease-lend type thing from the States. The transmitters came in, imported American RCA 50 kilowatt units, MI7330, the type number. They were different to all the transmitters the BBC had had before, in that they were all air-cooled for shortwave. No crypt here, no way of putting waterworks below the senders, because the water table is about 300 millimetres below the floor. So you couldn't dig out great rooms to put pumps and tanks in. So these were air-cooled senders, 50 kilowatt, sent across on leased land by the Americans. Six of them, and they were called senders 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86. The antennas were erected outside between masts, wire antennas, and they were based on the 100 kilowatt design that was first knocked out at Daventry. So nothing revolutionary on the antennas. They were all well proven, and they've been used many times before. So that's...
Just going to check we're still recording okay. Yeah.
So that's the first incarnation of transmitters here at Aussie 10, Overseas Station Extension number 10. This situation carried on throughout the war, carrying BBC World Service, or it would be external services then. The antennas here were specified for DX, long range, and also fairly short range antennas. Skelton had predominantly, well, Aussie 8 and 9, Skelton in Cumberland, that was predominantly short range, so we'd be broadcasting to the Low Countries and into Scandinavia, etc. Daventry was always a DX station, and Rampersham was a DX station. This Wooferton site, Aussie 10, was a DX and near coverage station, so it had both sorts of antennas that would do that. The situation at Wooferton carried on throughout the war. It came on the air 17th of October 1943 with the six RCA transmitters, 50 kilowatts. It didn't last very long though, because by 1948, the BBC, at the end of the war, the BBC realised it had got an awful lot of shortwave capacity and didn't need it all. So they thought they'd shut the low-powered station. So this was the station to be closed. And it was running down throughout 1948 with very few BBC transmissions. And the staff were actually sent off to other stations. It was actually shut for a few weeks. The staff were sent off to other stations, dispersed far and wide. Suddenly, though, something happened. The Americans were getting concerned about the Soviet Union and its takeover of Bulgaria, Hungary, etc., and the satellite states, East Germany, which was just starting to be formed in 1949, and were concerned that they'd like to get some shortwave into those states. The problem was they couldn't do it from the states, from the United States, because you were a good distance away, so they must have approached the BBC and said, have you any facilities we could use or rent? And the corporation said, yeah, we've got the transmitter site at Wooferton. And it just happens to have leased end transmitters in from the United States. It was called the Voice of America, a relay station in the United Kingdom. And if you looked it up on any documents, that was always the title. But underneath, it would say in small letters, in brackets, transmitters operated by BBC. So it was the VOA relay in the United Kingdom. Officially kicked off in 1948. And then the programmes would go out of here in various languages, mainly to the east, and possibly down to North Africa, but mainly eastwards, particularly towards the Soviet Union and all the satellite states. So it was the VRA relay in the United Kingdom. Carried on like that. So the station sort of was risen from the ashes, really, and it carried on like that, carrying the VOA on the six senders. Yeah, during the war, there was one point, though, when the actual station was closed down temporarily, even by the BBC, and it was visited by personnel from the RAF, and they came and removed two of the transmitter units. They took away sender 81 and sender 82, and maybe some parts also from 83 and 84. They were taken away. Nobody knew where they went at the time. They took the RF sections away, and it was found out after the war they were actually taken to Crowborough, which of course was called Aspidistra then. They were taken to Aspidistra and modified to transmit on around 28, 29, 30 megahertz, as a V2 rocket carcass had been found in Sweden, and it had telemetry inside it that was on those frequencies, and they were fearful that the V2 rocket, about which they knew, was actually radio controlled. So there was a provision to get from here to jam it, to go and jam the system. In the event, it was only a test firing, it was a prototype rocket, and the original V2s, when they came into production, weren't radio controlled. So the RAF brought the stuff back after the war, and it was reinstalled. But like most things that happened during the war, one would guess, not all the parts came back. So Sender 81 was always a fair deal of make do and mend to get that one to work, because the original parts were not, all the original parts were not returned. Anyway, so after the war then, 1948, six senders back on the air, the VOA relay. Carried on, and escalations in tensions between the superpowers during the Cold War meant that by 1961 there'd been the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Bay of Pigs disaster, and all sorts of activities like that. And the satellite states and the Soviet Union were to the United States getting more and more powerful. So there was a wish to broadcast, to continue to broadcast into the Soviet Union, etc., but with much higher power. So the VOA asked if the BBC could consider having new equipment installed at Wolverton. And this would be at the phase two. We've gone through the phase one with the six RCA-50s. By 1963, plans were well away and new equipment was being installed. What was installed was the first prototype made by Marconi, BD-272, 250 kilowatt transmitter, biggest power that the BBC had ever seen by then. It was the first one made, and it was installed as sender 93. The numbers were incremented, so sender 83 became sender 93. And the antennas had to be upgraded as well to 250 kilowatt working. Matrix switches were put down on the antenna field where you could have a cross-point system where an antenna and a feeder line could be connected together over multiple arrays, so that the sender could then pick any number of arrays to broadcast into. So 93 was the first one. It was joined by the others, the next six. Still, there was enough room in the building that the far-end suite of transmitters, 85 and 86, were untouched. They were left down there. So in the space that the Americans had got two RCA transmitters down each side, Marconi got three transmitters down each side, and they were five times more powerful, going from 50 kilowatts to 250 kilowatts. It was interesting that the VOA paid for this. It was an all-American job. And money was given to the corporation to buy them from Marconi's in Chelmsford. A lot of the antennas were still BBC designs, but as I say, uprated. So the Americans took the risk with this new transmitter, and the BBC watched from the sidelines to see what it was like. We're now entering phase two. As it happened, it was a most successful transmitter, and the BBC were very impressed and went away and placed orders with Marconi for a considerable number of these units to upgrade Rampersham, Skelton A and Daventry. As well, at the time, Ascension Island was being planned, 1965, so they had four of them out there. And the Deutsche Welle bought some for Oanda, although it was probably called a different name by then, at that time. So they had a pair out there. BD-272, popular transmitter. Important to remember that the Americans took the hit on that one. They paid for them. They were considered to be American property, and American auditors would come across from time to time to look at what was happening here and check that stuff that had been bought under their remit was actually installed. So that situation carried on with the 6250s until 1979, when they were looking to again upgrade this site with the Americans paying, and it was decided to remove the two old sender 85 and sender 86 from the far end and install four brand new Marconi 300 kilowatt transmitters this time. The great thing about the modern transmitters, they were titled B6124s, was that they were auto-tune and control. So you could request a frequency from the control system, which had been designed by BBC Research and BBC Designs Department, and again was the first one, and again paid for by the Americans. So that was the state of play from 1979. When they started to be installed, they came on the air in 1981, and it ran like that. So there were now 10 senders at Wolverton, the six old 250s, the four 300s, new arrays, and the station was very much the voice of America relay. There were times when the VOA were not on the air and the BBC would pop some world service or external services, as it was then, programming out as well under an arrangement. So that's how that worked. Come 1998, the VOA had been here 50 years. the government, the UK government, had decided to privatise BBC transmission, and it was sold off. The domestic side went off to Crown Castle International, CCI, but the external services side, including the Bush House Control Room, the Schedule Frequency Management Unit in Bush House, and some of the overseas relays that were operated by the BBC, were all passed across to a company called Merlin Communications International, set up by a team who ran SFM department, Schedule Frequency and Monitoring. So they got the job to run the stations. Some were former diplomatic wireless stations, as in Oman and Cyprus, but they all came under Merlin control after that, but operated by Merlin. The VOA had seen this change, and as I say, by 1998, they decided to exit from being the VOA relay station in the United Kingdom and just brokered time on it like any other broadcaster could do. So Wolferton lost its VOA control but came under Merlin control. So it had always been an unusual station in that it was considered by many not to be BBC. VOA had exited, and Merlin was now able to take broadcasts from lots of other people. And we ended up with a Deutsche Welle contract. And to do that, we needed some new transmitters. It was decided to pension off the first of the Marconi BD272s. So the first one that came out was Sender 96, installed in 1963. That one came out first, and a new transmitter was installed that came from RIS in Croatia, from Zagreb. It was a RIS 500 kilowatt. It was the prototype RIS. Here we go again with prototype kit. 500 kilowatt RIS. The Sender 96 was downrated at our request to 250 kilowatts max. And that meant it could work into any of the antennas here. You certainly would not have wanted to put 500 kilowatts out. We couldn't stand that amount of power. So 96 was the first one to come. It was the prototype. Totally different design to anything we'd seen before. You just put the frequency in and it tunes up itself. That was the first one. While that was being done, the engineers from RIS says, you know, we've got a 250 kilowatt one in production at the moment. It's just in the prototype stage. Do you think you fancy some of those? So the crew must have been across. The Deutsche Welle contract came up in, that was 2006. The Deutsche Welle contract came up in 2008. And they must have gone to look at the 250 kilowatts ones at the factory in Zagreb. And it was agreed to buy three more for this station, three of a brand new design, 250 kilowatt only. One went to Skelton to make a fourth, and one and four were bought by the BBC to go out to Ascension to replace four of the BD272s that they'd got from 1965. So there were quite a few RIS transmitters installed at the time. Coming right up to date, Sender 93 has just been removed, which just leaves one of the old girls left, Sender 95, which is 250 kilowatts. And the new Sender 93 will be a reclaimed unit from Singapore, which was the first at Skelton as Sender 61. It went to Singapore as Sender 107, but with Singapore closing in 2023 in June, that sender has been able to be rescued and brought back to the UK. So that will shortly take its place and be the fourth 250 kilowatt unit and the fifth RIS unit on the side.
That was Dave Porter with a brief history of Wolferton and a taste of things to come. But more of that later. This is a special transmission celebrating the 80th anniversary of the first transmission from Wolferton Transmitting Station, now the last remaining shortwave broadcasting station in the United Kingdom. We'll be hearing from some of the current team at Wolferton next, but first, wherever you're listening to this special transmission, we'd love to hear from you. Just send your reception report to radio@encompass.tv. That's radio@encompass.tv, and we'll send you a special Wolferton at 80 electronic QSL. And one lucky listener will also be winning a unique piece of Wolferton history as a souvenir. But now back to the team at Wolferton, who keep the station on air 24 hours a day. Let's start with senior engineer Martin Goulding at the beginning of the programme chain.
Right, well, we're in our satellite receive room where we receive programmes for the likes of the BBC World Service, The Voice of America, Deutsche Welle. So from this site, we receive programmes that are broadcast from Wolferton and are also provided to other sites around the world for all these international broadcasters. We receive them off satellite here. They're either fed into our transmitters here and put onto shortwave radio into North Africa, into Europe, into Russia, into the Middle East, and even into South America. Or we send them off over a fibre network to other sites like Ascension in the Atlantic Ocean or to Singapore. All these other sites that are around the world provide the programme from here.
What's your main purpose?
Our main purpose is to provide a communication for listeners in countries where perhaps their communications aren't very good. So maybe their internet service isn't very good, local radio doesn't provide unbiased information. And our service is really learning, education, and providing that vital communication for a lot of nations that perhaps don't have these modern communication techniques.
In North Africa, if we turned something off here, they would suddenly find that there's nothing on their radio.
That's absolutely right. For them, it's a vital service. So it's like anyone listening to radio here. If Radio 4 or any other service went off, you'd be tuning the dial, trying to find it, desperately trying to hear your programme. And that's what we provide from Wolferton. We provide a service that actually covers, you know, a large area. So we broadcast one transmitter, one signal via shortwave into North Africa. It could cover several countries, and that's the beauty of it. You know, it's a low cost way of getting program and information into a nation. We were just listening to some program from the Voice of America. Now, if we go over here,
this is the BBC. There are no programmes on this channel at present.
So as you can hear there, it's just a BBC ident. But if I just quickly go through, there we go. There's a live programme from the BBC World Service there. And of course, it's music, not speech for you.
Crucial as well to make sure that you keep on getting this flow. You talked about
this
golden generation.
The BBC are providing right now. And this could be broadcast by us, or it could be broadcast by one of the other stations I mentioned before, Ascension Island, Singapore. All these different places are receiving this, and depending on the time of day, it will depend on what actual programme goes out. Because one of the things we do here is we're not a 24/7 service in the sense of you just switch on your radio, one frequency, we're there. We actually transmit under different frequencies at different times of the day, because the way the ionosphere works in the sky, it depends how well the signal will actually get to that part of the world.
Now part of the diaspora across Europe and across America to try and...
One of the things that historically has happened, like during the Cold War, the Russians would jam any shortwave broadcasts. And in fact, even today, the Iranians tried to jam shortwave and the Chinese also.
This is Wolferton at 80, a special transmission by Encompass Digital Media, celebrating the 80th anniversary of Wolferton Transmitting Station.
Hi there, I'm Matt Porter. I'm one of the transmitter engineers at Wolferton. I have been here now for 3 years. However, I did have 2 years here between 2009 and 2011, where my love of Wolferton was first developed. An opportunity came up in 2020 to get back here, and I haven't looked back since. I'm a keen, enthusiastic radio amateur. I hold the call sign G8XYJ, which was a legacy from my father, who is also a former senior transmitter engineer on site. My main interest in radio is VHF generally, so it's nice to do HF during the day and VHF at home. It's such a great place to work with friendly people who are both enthusiastic and knowledgeable about all things shortwave broadcasting.
I'm David Passy, and I'm a transmitter engineer here at Wolferton Transmitting Station. I think for me, radio started as a passion as a kid. I remember trading my rights to an Easter egg for a crystal radio kit when I was 8 years old, and built that up with my dad, and with a bit of wire, received a few local medium wave stations, and there was a certain magic in that. Dabbled around with radio as a kid. People gave me components, and I learned to build little bits and bobs of circuits. As I got a bit older, I managed to build better circuits and got into my teens, early 20s. I became licensed under what was then the new foundation license as a radio amateur. Didn't get to do much for a while. We didn't have access to the same kind of equipment that's available today, but as I did manage to start to get a little bit of transmitting equipment, I started to make my way on air. So not just receiving, but transmitting as well. It became quite a sort of mainstay hobby for me for many years, particularly while I was studying at university. I could study along with my formal studies to crease my way through the licensing. All the while, I was putting that to good use on the hills, doing a lot of summits on the air. It was very much a bread and butter hobby and consumed quite a lot of my life at the time. Ultimately, led me to using the skills I picked up in the hobby and the interests to pursue a career in the power industry, where I was until 2020, when I was recruited by another engineer, Matt Porter, who works here. He made some introductions. It happened that there were some vacancies coming up, which I successfully applied to and started working here in March 2020. So I'm the newest of the transmitter engineers here, newest and least experienced, but somehow I've managed to transition from a hobby that I have a lot of passion for to actually making a career of it. So I'm one of the lucky very few, I suppose, in that regard.
Hi, I'm Chris Meek. I'm a general maintenance person at Wolferton. I literally live a few hundred yards down the road. Been there for a while now, so it's been 17, coming 18 years. The interesting effects you get sometimes on radios and amplifiers and telephones, they seem to have diminished recently, but there was always a little bit of a buzz going on.
I'm John Norton. I'm a transmitter engineer at Wolferton. I've always been interested in radio, even from a very young age, making radios, things like that. So it's an ideal job for me and thoroughly enjoy what I do. My passion is radio. I'm a licensed radio amateur. I got involved initially with the digital switchover during the transition to terrestrial digital television in the UK. I pretty much tested most of the relay stations in the factory before they got sent out. I then became involved in DGPS, which is direction finding for the General Lighthouse Authority, which was a very enjoyable period of time, visiting lots of lighthouses and sites, installing radio equipment. Moving on from that, I applied and got a job at Wolferton, and that's how I ended up here and where we are today. So all in all, I've had an interest from day one all the way through to almost retirement one day.
I am Richard Norris from Seychelles. A little brief about my career as a RF stroke transmitter engineer. I started way back in the year 2000 at the Indian Ocean Relay Station, better known as IORS. And at the time, it was run by Merlin Communications. And I didn't know it by that name when I started. It was known to me just as the BBC, which surprised to me when I heard it's called Merlin now. At the time when I joined, there were two UK expats. They were Barry Elding, who was the station manager, and Simon Adams. Simon Adams was the senior engineer. And after a few years, the site was run solely by Seychelles staff. My career really progressed from there, whereby I went to Oman, which is another relay station in the Middle East. Did a few stints there. A few years later, further down the line, we learned that the Seychelles site was about to close and we had to look for other places. And that's where I learned about Ascension. And I applied and got a job there as a transmitter engineer as well, which was a very good experience where I spent for 5 years, where eventually I learned of an opening here at Wolferton, which I applied and I was successful. I've been working here since December 2020 to date, and it's the best move I've ever had.
Gillian Sandel, I've been at Wolferton since 1992, where I started as an engineer. My very first evening shift here was somewhat exciting, as within half an hour of arriving on the site, There was a Buchholz alarm on one of the senders, followed by a Buchholz trip, which took out the HT transformer had failed. And the engineer who was in charge, and had been there for 20 years, took one look at it and said, "I've never seen one of those before." So it was a bit of a baptism by fire.
Well, there's some of the team who keep Wooferton ticking. But who looks after the engineers? Well, here's the answer.
Hello, my name is Sarah Lovelock. I am the office manager, but I never always was the office manager. I started here 34 years ago, and I started as a cook, helping out in the kitchen. But I was very, very young, so I was never on my own in the kitchen. And then my first job was making scones, which I still do to this day, 34 years later. From there, I went to do GMA. Then from GMA, I went back to in the kitchen, helped the riggers down the field with the insulators. One of my memories in the kitchen was in the early years, everyone was segregated. So the bosses had a table, the managers had a table. So there were some young engineers, but they weren't allowed on the senior engineers' table. And that was how life was in those days. And you always, when you were spoken to, you were always very polite, which obviously I still am now. But in those days, you always called everybody sir, and that was how it was done. And if they were had a job that was in authority, you took them their tea and their dinner and their cake and their afternoon break on a tray into their own room. So when I first started, my first boss was Dave Green, who was lovely, but unfortunately he's no longer here. I then had Peter Loveday, who I got on really well with and still have a lot to do with him today, and Barry Elding, which everybody will know. He was my boss for quite a while, and he obviously saw something in me, because from the early years of being a chef and a GMA, I now am the office manager at Wooferton, which I love, and I look after all of the engineers, young and old. We do even have a consultant's chair in the office for anybody that's feeling down or just needs a little chat. I'm always here to help everybody. It's not just a job, it's my life.
This is Wooferton at 80, a special transmission by Encompass Digital Media, a global managed services provider connecting broadcasters with audiences. For more information, find us on the web at encompass.tv/radio.
I must have heard that 1,000 times over the years, but it still brings back fond memories. Hi, I'm Rick Rowe, and I was based at Wooferton from 1991 to 2021, when I retired after almost 40 years service. I have nothing but fond memories and admiration for the team of people that ran the station. Wooferton delivered on every front, providing a first-class shortwave service for our customers. I was in charge of the station for a short while, during which we started to diversify and bought new services into the station via satellite, something which was quite new at the time. This started to phase away the use of the old BT lines. I was also involved with a new generation of shortwave DRM transmitters made by RIS. Now, they were quite a step forward in terms of technology and complexity, and fault-finding techniques had to be honed in, as they were quite new to us. But over a short period of time, our skilled engineers soon mastered what was required, and we even improved the performance of them over time, and they performed to an exceptional level, and Wooferton's SLA performance was absolutely top-notch. Latterly, Wooferton moved on again with the times and engaged new technology, becoming an important satellite earth station and program distribution hub via high-speed fibres. This required the staff to take on new skills, and they adapted as they always do. But As in all successful companies and organisations, the most important thing is your staff, and I salute you all with your utmost skill, professionalism, and above all, the friendly, team-orientated approach, which shines, and everyone that ever visits Wolverton will say that. It's a wonderful station, and I salute you all, and I look forward to coming to the 100th. Take care.
I'm Sandy Ross, and for 33 years, between 1979 and 2012, I was a transmitter engineer at Wolverton. When I started, there were six 250 kilowatt Marconi BD272 transmitters, and installation of a further four 300 kilowatt Marconi B6124 transmitters was just about to start. The schedule in 1979 was very busy in the evening and overnight. During the day, there was only a 2-hour maintenance break when there were no transmissions. We operated a 3-shift system, days, evenings and nights, and there was 5 engineering staff on each shift. 3 engineers were designated either aerial engineer, control room engineer or transmitter engineer. The aerial engineer's duties were to manually slew or reverse the scheduled aerial, and as some were almost a mile from the site, he, and it was all men at that time, was provided with a bike. During a nice summer's night, it was probably the best job in the world, cycling round in the pitch dark, listening to the local wildlife. But of course, wintry nights were not nearly so pleasant. Sometimes you could be out on your bike for over an hour, and often you would receive a radio clear from the GSE and be expected, with the use of a long pole, to manually slew an antenna in the 30-second switching period prior to the programme start. That made you sweat. The transmitter engineer's job was either feast or famine. When the senders were on power, he became very proficient at doing the Times or Telegraph crossword, unless of course the EIC was hovering close by. However, during the switching period, he may well have to change the frequency and retune several transmitters all within the 30 seconds. Sometimes it even got so busy the SME may have come out of his office to lend a hand. During the switching period, the control room engineer would be manually selecting and checking senders were selected to the correct programme chain and aerial. For many years, I was branch secretary of our trade union, which I found very interesting. Our local industrial relations were usually very amicable. One incident that sticks in my mind was during the local liaison meeting in 2001, when the door was flung open and the engineer blurted out that 2 aeroplanes had crashed into the Twin Towers. Of course, it wasn't all work, and there were some real jokers amongst the staff. Swapping someone's lunchbox hard-boiled egg for a fresh egg, or soldering shut another's tin lunchbox.
And I think there's plenty more stories like that. That was Sandy Ross, another former senior engineer at Wolverton. Well, let's finish now with a few more fond memories and good wishes for the future.
My name's Kieran Hughes. I've been working for the MCR in London for around 20 years now. A fond memory of Wolverton was around 10 years ago. Just imagine, Queen's speech has finished, all the transmitters are on, putting Christmas music out, Christmas programmes, to North Africa, Europe, you name it, very busy. Engineer calls me. Kieran, is there any chance I could go off site for about an hour and spend some time with my family and have my Christmas meal? I say, sure, why not? You go and enjoy Christmas. Off the engineer goes. 10 minutes later, receiving lots of alarms from Wolverton, a power spike. Little did I know, there was actually a power outage. All the senders are off now. The transmitters are off. Not good. I get most of them back because we can remotely access Wolverton, but a few of them still off. I call the engineer. I get a reply from the engineer. You are joking, right? Unfortunately, the poor engineer never got a chance to have his Christmas meal with his family.
I came to Wolverton in 2006. I was lucky enough to witness and be a part of the addition of digital transmissions and fully automatically tuned RIS shortwave transmitters. Thank you, Wolverton, for the time and the fun years you have given me, and long may you continue to prosper. Happy 80th birthday. Best wishes, David Peters.
Congratulations, Wolverton, on reaching your 80th year of broadcasting shortwave radio. When I joined the BBC in 1982, I was told shortwave had a maximum of 10 years. Yet here you are. still broadcasting radio around the world with your combination of old Marconi transmitters, one of which is only 20 years younger than yourself, and of course your newer RIS DRM transmitters. I have many, many happy memories of working and having fun at Wolverton. A lot of fun. Many of these are best told over a pint or two. I do remember the worry I had in 2004, on the first night of no evening and night shifts, leaving you and your old transmitters broadcasting, unattended by your staff. Then the joy on New Year's Eve 2006, when we celebrated with champagne in your sender hall as the first DRM transmissions started. You are a survivor. People are your heart and soul and come and go, ensuring you move on to new technologies. I feel privileged to have been part of your long history. You look great at 80 and fighting fit for a long, long future. Happy birthday.
That was Barry Alding, the engineering manager at Wolverton until very recently. And that's almost the end of this special broadcast celebrating 80 years of broadcasting from Wolverton. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your reception reports to radio@encompass.tv for a special Wolverton at 80 electronic QSL and the chance to win a piece of radio history. So what of the future? Well, let's give the final word to Paul Firth, Encompass's commercial director for radio.
So after 80 years of broadcasting, I guess the obvious question is, what comes next? Well, although shortwave is a declining technology, it is still listened to in certain parts of the world, and especially those areas where it's not practical for large networks of FM transmitters, or perhaps where the internet is unreliable or even unaffordable. So I can see shortwave continuing for a little while longer yet. But beyond that, I think, and beyond the traditional shortwave, then the future really is digital. And for Wolverton in particular, that means Digital Radio Mondiale, or DRM. After many years, we are starting to see countries choose DRM as their digital standard for the future. Recently, Indonesia, Pakistan and China have all announced positive moves into the DRM arena, alongside India, who of course continue to lead the way in DRM domestic broadcasting. Consequently, as countries and audiences make the switch to DRM, Wolverton, with over half of its transmitters able to broadcast in DRM already, will hopefully gain yet another new lease of life and continue to reach far-flung audiences in digital radio for many, many more years to come.
You've been listening to Wolverton at 80, a special transmission by Encompass Digital Media, a global managed services provider connecting broadcasters with audiences. For more information, find us on the web at encompass.tv/radio.
This is London calling.
Canada International.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Praha. This is Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Praha. This is Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Praha.
This is Radio Free Europe.
Liberty.
Forget, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your reception reports to radio@encompass.tv for a special Wolferton at 80 electronic QSL and the chance to win a piece of radio history.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
London calling.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International.
Forget, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your reception reports to radio@encompass.tv for a special Wolferton at 80 electronic QSL and the chance to win a piece of radio history.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International.
We'd love to hear from you. Please send your reception reports to radio@encompass.tv for a special Wolferton at 80 electronic QSL and the chance to win a piece of radio history.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
London calling.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International.
Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your reception reports to radio@encompass.tv for a special Wolferton at 80 electronic QSL and the chance to win a piece of radio history.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
London calling.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Praha. This is Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Praha. This is Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Praha.
This is Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty.
Forget, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your reception reports to radio@encompass.tv for a special Wolferton at 80 electronic QSL and the chance to win a piece of radio history.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
London calling.
Radio Canada International.
Radio Canada International.